Dr. Allard is a pediatrician and medical educator. As an associate dean, she leads the Division of Community Outreach and Medical Education. She directs pipeline programming and other support programmings for diverse students together with the faculty and staff. In her position, she helps recruit underrepresented students from diverse backgrounds and supports them when they matriculate at Albany Medical College. Dr. Allard guides the service learning curriculum at the college. She is also one of several advising deans. As an advising dean, she mentors and advises medical students from all backgrounds through their academic journey. Dr. Allard, thank you for joining us on 105.3 FM, the Sanctuary for Independent Media. This is another segment of Health Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, I am so excited that you've agreed to be on the show with us today and really excited about the work that you're doing at Albany Medical College. Can you tell us a little bit more about your work there?
So I started at Albany Medical College about 9 years ago. I was recruited to work with students from diverse and underrepresented backgrounds and to spearhead the formal service learning program. So in my role, I really spend a lot of time working with students, both pre-meds and students that already matriculated that are from underrepresented backgrounds. And I also oversee our formal service learning curriculum.
So what exactly is the service learning program? What does it do for students? What do they do?
So service learning is based on basically four tenets. One, it's based on community-identified needs. Two, there are specific learning objectives involved. Three, there has to be some sort of formal preparation orientation involved. And finally, there has to be some critical self-reflection. It really is a way to establish important, sustainable, and really contributes to communities in a meaningful way. So at Albany Med, we emphasize particularly the social determinants of health, and we emphasize working with underserved communities. We believe that medical students can really become better physicians by being a part of service learning. We think that if they understand the issues that are outside of just the medical field and understand those social determinants of health I'm talking about, that they can ultimately become better physicians from the perspective that they're able to understand the entire patient and therefore even be able to bring to them resources that can help with those parts of their lives. Medical students here are required to do about 40 hours over 4 years. It's not a lot of hours, but it's enough that, and most students do many more than that, but it really allows them to get a real feel for what it's like to work in the community and understand the issues.
Are the students, are they part of the underrepresented population themselves, or are they majority students?
So it's actually all students, so it's both underrepresented students and majority students that participate in service learning. And that's a critically important thing, because if you think about that, that means that everyone is prepared to work with students from diverse backgrounds, work with patients from diverse backgrounds. Our goal is that we have a very diverse country and world, and we want everyone to be prepared to take care of those patients. And by having everyone work with underrepresented or underserved and diverse populations, we really are saying that it's everyone's responsibility.
So for my listeners, when we talk about underrepresented or underserved, we're really talking about minority folks, correct?
Yes. Communities of color are obviously, when you talk about underserved, we have underserved from all different backgrounds. But in this country, a significant portion of our underserved individuals are individuals of color or minorities. But the truth is that they're not minorities in the world. So I really sort of stick to underrepresented or to communities of color.
So what kind of programs do your students volunteer in? Who do they participate with?
So we have over probably about 20 different opportunities now, and there's a range. I'll give you some examples. One program is called Health System Navigation in the Community. One of the people that I work with, Kara Burke, leads this, and we work with community-based organizations. Two that we're working with right now are the Center for Law and Justice and HADIS, which is the Homeless and Travelers Aid Society. And what we do is we are willing to work with individuals for any issues they have with accessing the healthcare system. That might be that they need to get insurance. They need to figure out what their insurance does. It may mean that they need to find specialists that take their insurance, or they may need some help sort of figuring out instructions they got from their doctor. They may need help working with their pharmacist. All of these things, we actually have students embedded in the community with faculty and staff that work with these individuals. At the Center for Law and Justice, the population is heavily individuals of color and individuals that are formerly incarcerated. And at HADIS, mm-hmm. it's individuals who are homeless. So clearly they have a very high need in terms of being able to figure out sort of integrating with the healthcare system. Another program we have is called Strong Mom. Strong Mom is we pair medical students with either pregnant or parenting adolescent young women, and they have sessions every other week where they have classes. They may be helping them get back into school or go on to college or help them find jobs. But we do information around having a healthy pregnancy, working with the children when they're born. For example, a session they had recently was one where they had the nutrition club. The medical students came in and showed them how to make their own baby food. So there are really a lot of different things we do with Strong Mom. Another program is called Generations Together, where medical students are paired with individuals that have dementia or early dementia, and they really do respite care, meaning that they help out the primary caregivers by going out and being out in the world with the individuals and working with them. Another program is Project SOAR, where medical students are mentoring and tutoring students in the community in charter schools, for example, where they work with these individuals and really have the students understand what it is like, what the future can be like for them, and help them mm-hmm. to attain whatever they want to be. And that's just a sampling, but there are many more that I could go through.
You know, that sounds incredible. Of course, I have a bias towards international work, and so I do some work in Kenya and trying to bring doctors into rural villages throughout Kisumu, which is a district in Kenya. And I'm always amazed when I take Americans with me, if they're medical professionals, be it doctors or nurses or dentists, and we go to the third world, quote unquote, the third world, and we bring modern medicine to them. I'm always amazed at my doctors and my clinicians who are surprised at how valuable medical care is and how inaccessible it is for people in the third world. I mean, we live in Albany. We have Albany Medical College is right down the road. There are lots of clinics in the area, and yet we still have people that don't have access to medical care.
And I think that that's an important point. We are dealing here in the United States with disparities in care that could rival some of those in other countries. And we really want our students to understand what the issues are and how you actually deal with those issues. But in terms of programming, we also have another service learning program that's called AMCRI, which is they work with a community-based organization that works with immigrants from other countries and refugees and help them navigate the system here in the United States. So we do have our students involved with others coming from other countries as well.
Excellent. So what do the students say about the work? What do you hear from them when they come back from their time? What do they say to you about their experiences?
So as I talked about, one of the tenets of service learning is reflection. Our idea is that we have to bring the students to a point where they actually think about what they're doing and why it's important. And students will say it over and over again. I think there's several different levels. There's one where they're working with individuals that many of them may not have worked with in the past, and I will tell you, students will say, you know, I couldn't believe this young child was talking about this, and it was the same thing that I was thinking about when I was their age. I didn't realize that, you know, accessing the healthcare system was such a problem for so many people. They also begin to see that, and this is really what we want, that they can't necessarily take care of everything a patient has by just writing a prescription, that there are other things that need to be met and that there are other roles that they're going to have to fill as physicians. And we are really seeing when we do the reflection, we have them do both a written reflection and as well as a group reflection, and it really comes together for many of our students.
That's incredible. Tell me, what are you doing new and next at the hospital? What's next on the horizon for you?
Well, I haven't spoken about some of the things that we do. For example, we have a pipeline program that's called STEP that's actually been around for quite a bit of time. This is a program for underrepresented and economically disadvantaged 7th through 12th graders, and we actually have medical students teaching in the program as part of that. But our goal is to hopefully some of these students will eventually come to the point where they think that they want to be in medicine and maybe someday be in our medical school. We are actually working on a program right now where we're going to be doing massage, hand massage for chemotherapy patients, and we're working with the faculty at the School of Massage here in Albany so that we can bring this, because we know that, you know, touch can be healing and comforting for chemotherapy patients. I'm also working with some students to perhaps start a program where we'll have students working with adults with developmental disabilities. So those are just some of the things that may be coming around the horizon.
So when do you sleep, doctor, with all of that?
So I have to say I'm very, lucky. I have a wonderful staff here in the Division of Community Outreach and Medical Education. I mentioned Kara Burke. Marva Richards actually oversees the STEP program. We have two STEP coordinators that work part-time, Melissa Warrender and Valerie Rivera. And then I also have Dr. Hyacinth Mason, who works with me in terms of supporting the underrepresented students. It's definitely a team effort. It's something that I really am able to do. And I have to say that I really feel blessed in the sense that this is something that obviously I'm passionate about, and I have the support of Dr. Henry Pohl, who's the Vice Dean for Academic Administration, and the Dean of the College, Dr. Vincent Verdile, and I really feel, pretty blessed to be in this position.
It sounds as if to me that the college and the medical hospital have really doubled down on supporting you in this effort, that it's not just you, but that the whole hospital is behind the initiative.
I will definitely say that this is something that is viewed as a commitment to the community at large, and I think that the medical center as well as the college and as a team have said that this is important. Mr. Barber, the CEO, talks regularly in his communications to us about the communication, about the community piece that we have involved in Albany, because it is important.
Well, I will share with you, full disclosure, my brother was an employee at Albany Medical Center. He worked in HR, and he passed away May 19th of this year. He died of a pulmonary embolism. He died on the tennis court playing tennis. He was beloved by myself and my family, obviously, and he was beloved by the school and the hospital as well. And they have been very, very supportive of us. And so every time I think about the medical center, I think about my brother, and he loved his work there, and he was devoted to the hospital. And, you know, as I explore all of the great work that the hospital is doing, I learned why he was so supportive of the hospital. So I'm grateful for all of the work that you're doing. I commend you for the work. I just encourage you to keep it up. And at any time in the future, if you want to come on to the radio station and talk about a new initiative or participate in Health Watch again, you have an open door at this station at any time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
To my listeners, this is another segment of Health Watch at 105.3 FM, the sanctuary for independent media. This is Lavonia Mallory. Thank you, Dr. Allard.
Thank you. You're very welcome.